This weekend, we Americans do remember and honor the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. for his courageous and historic efforts on behalf of full civil rights for all our citizens, particularly those of color and the poor. However, Dr. King didn't lead that civil rights movement alone. There were many, thousands, and there were the big three, as they were called then. There was King, but there was also the Reverend Ralph David Abernathy and the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth. He's the one in the middle. They're the ones in 1957 who formed the Southern Leadership Conference. I was thinking this week as I was looking at the passage about Moses and the burning bush story from Exodus, made me think about Fred Shuttlesworth again. He was a forthright Baptist preacher, and he endured beatings and bombings and fire hosings to make sure he could integrate his hometown of Birmingham, Alabama, which was ground zero in the civil rights movement. Fred died in 2011. He was almost 90 years old then. And according to Diane McWhorter, who has chronicled the events in Birmingham, and it won her the Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction back in 2002, she said King was the face of the movement because he was more conciliatory. He was more acceptable to white people, especially when it came to raising funds for the movement. Shuttlesworth, on the other hand, he was always pushing for action and confrontation, especially with Bull Connor, you remember? Birmingham's racist, violent police chief. Because Fred had grown up in Birmingham, he graduated class valedictorian from his high school. And when the Supreme Court outlawed segregation in Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, that's when Reverend Shuttlesworth became a civil rights activist as a pastor. And he fought for and called for the hiring of African-American police officers, the promoting of voter registration, and he supported the Montgomery bus boycott of Dr. King. On Christmas night, 1956, 15 sticks of dynamite exploded outside the parsonage where Reverend Shuttlesworth lived with his family. It destroyed their little humble quarters. But he emerged from that to lead a march the very next day of 200 people to integrate buses in Birmingham. A year later, when he tried to enroll two of his children in an all-white school, a dozen men met him with chains, brass knuckles, and baseball bats. He was beaten unconscious. His wife was stabbed. Another time, the KKK planted a bomb under his house, and I heard him tell this story once. It blew he and his wife out into the front yard in their bed unharmed. Reverend Shuttlesworth often said he was willing to die if that's what it took to draw attention to the injustices in our society. But after that second explosion that nearly took his life, he once made the comment, "God must have made me bomb-proof so I could help change history." We all know that history very well, don't we? How African Americans were forcibly brought to this country, sold into slavery. Once in captivity, those slaves were taken often to their white masters' churches. They were baptized and made into Christians. But there they would learn the story of Moses, about the enslavement of the Hebrew children in Egypt, and how God sent Moses to deliver them. The implication was clear and profound. God is on the side of the oppressed, the poor, the enslaved, not the powerful, the rich, the oppressive pharaohs of the world. And if God sent Moses to set the Hebrews free, then God had sent Dr. King, Reverend Shuttlesworth, to do the same in their generation. I actually had the privilege of meeting Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth once. I was a young 20-something attending the Baptist Seminary in Louisville, Kentucky. Reverend Shuttlesworth was a pastor of a church, a large church, up in Cincinnati, Ohio. So our school invited him down to speak in chapel one day, and he preached on this text about Moses and the burning bush. And in that great African-American telling tradition of how they tell stories, I have never forgotten how he told the story of God calling Moses to go to Pharaoh and say, "Set my people free." And how Moses, once he'd been asked to do that by the voice in the bush, then asked, "But who shall I say sent me?" To which God responds, "Yahweh." And then according to Reverend Shuttlesworth, Moses said to God, "Who the hell is Yahweh?" You remember those moments in a sermon. It also taught me, I think it taught me as a young man, it's okay to cuss in sermons too. But Dr. Martin Luther King once said, "Nothing is more tragic than to sleep through a revolution." April 1963, Dr. King sat in a jail cell in Birmingham, Alabama, and he wrote a letter to the clergy of the white churches. The letter expressed his disappointment that the white churches were too unwilling to be serious disciples of Jesus, for they were afraid of cultural rejection. The white clergy had been asking King and Abernathy and Shuttlesworth to lighten up on their integration demands. "Don't push so hard and so fast for changes. Let the courts take care of it." By refusing to speak up for civil rights, most white clergy and churches of that era, not all, there were exceptions, but most, really forfeited their spiritual integrity. They forgot the actions of their founder, Jesus, who sacrificed his life for the poor who were in bondage to political and religious oppression. They forgot that Jesus once said, "Those who try to save their life are going to lose it, but those who lose their life for the sake of the kingdom, the reign of peace and justice in the world, they will find it." In his letter to the white church and the clergy, I want to read just a little of it that Dr. King wrote. "So often the contemporary church is a weak, ineffectual voice with an uncertain sound. So often it's an arch defender of the status quo. Far from being disturbed by the presence of the church, the power structure of the average community is consoled by the church's silence, or else its vocal sanction of the way things are. But the judgment of God is upon the church as it never has been before." Excuse me.